This show is produced by the Hartman Media Company. For more information and links to all our great podcasts, visit hartmanmedia.com.
Welcome to the American Monetary Association's podcast, where we explore how monetary policy impacts the real lives of real people and the action steps necessary to preserve wealth and enhance one's lifestyle.
It's my pleasure to welcome Mike Zlotnick. He is one of our Venture Alliance Mastermind members. I have known Mike for several years, and he does quite a lot in the hard money lending space. He runs a couple of different funds in that world as well, and he has a very analytical mind. He's a math pro, really has some interesting ideas on what these increased interest rates mean to investments, cap rates, and a whole host of other things in the economy. Mike, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Jason. How are you? Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
It's good to have you back on. You're a returning guest. So we see interest rates rising. That is having an effect, or it's going to have a significant effect on the market. Ultimately, the Fed has been very transparent about the fact that it will continue to increase rates, maybe up to five more times in the next year. So this is pretty significant. This is maybe the most transparent Federal Reserve, certainly of my adult life. You'd probably agree with me on that. But what does it all mean to investors and to investments?
So let me move forward. I'm going to move a couple of slides forward. This is presentation for educational purposes only. So that's my first disclaimer. So interest rates, this chart covers 30 plus years of interest rates, Federal Reserve target rate. And we are certainly in the period of abnormally low interest rates. As you can see, after the crash of 2008, we've been essentially near zero for almost 8 years. And I believe that Fed has made a significant error by not raising interest rates earlier. So they woke up towards the end of 2015, early 2016, and they started to increase interest rates, and they're increasing them at a pretty rapid pace, in my opinion. The impact
So you're saying they were behind the eight ball, they were behind the clock. Is your thesis now that they've moved too quickly, that they, because they waited so long, that now they're overreacting?
Exactly. Okay. What they have done is they kept the rate so low that the economy started heating up and it overheated. It. And unemployment, they have dual mandate, as you know, fight inflation and to keep the employment full. They missed the curve ball, or the eight ball on the inflation big time. And the inflation is actually reasonable, but the employment is the problem right now. The employment is full. We are facing lowest historic interest rates since the man went on the moon.
So what's interesting about what you say there is that that's a problem.
That's a problem because Fed has to raise rates and raise it fast. They need to fight that.
This is the issue of the Phillips curve, right? That relationship between employment and interest rates and you know, GDP and everything else, right? But it's really employment and inflation is the most core aspect of this discussion, I guess. So, yeah, okay, go ahead with what you're saying.
So the Fed is raising rates, as you mentioned. They have stated they will do five more increases, one more in 2018, three more in 2019, and one in 2020. That this is the current projection. They might wind up actually doing even worse, doing more increases if the employment continues to be where it is right now or continues to improve. So the consequence of that is that the rates are rising fast. And my point is, of this whole presentation, the rising interest rates, they cause grief on everything out there, including stock market, commercial real estate, some residential real estate. The cost of financing goes up. Look at the stock market literally today. It's having a fit. The stock market is not collapsing, but it's having a pretty bad day. And it's been having a bad day for quite a number of sessions recently since a Fed increased the rates by just a quarter. It's the expectation of continuous increases. The current economy is heavily overleveraged with cheap debt. Corporations are relying on cheap debt to deliver great results and great profits, and it's going to come to an end, and it's going to come to an end very, very fast. The other problem that will happen is corporate debt and some of the real estate notes will come to maturity in 2019, 2020, and that paper needs to be refinanced. And the rates are now couple hundred basis points higher than what they were a few years ago. That's alone a problem. It's going to cause
We've certainly been spoiled by artificially low interest rates for far too long, and I couldn't agree with you more. This is causing or has caused significant financial repression, where savers can't earn any decent interest rates on their savings. You know, they've done the right thing all their life, and they're forced into risky investments that they shouldn't be investing in, usually older people, of course, because of this financial repression, the interest rates are too low. And so now you're getting this position where they've got to overreact. And this is the problem, Mike. You know, the feedback loop takes so much time to work its way through the system. And this is another argument against why we shouldn't have a managed economy, why we shouldn't have a Federal Reserve, we shouldn't have central planning, because they can't get the feedback as fast as the market can get the feedback. It's like the feedback happens. Maybe they do something today. You start to see it in 6 months. You start to see it more in a year. And you're always looking in the rear view mirror. And then they got to have a meeting and talk about it. And there's all these political interests and nothing's aligned. And it's something else. It really is.
Yes, okay. That's so true. Yeah. You're letting bureaucrats and politicians make the decisions when it comes to the economy. And that's terrible. I'm in agreement with you 100%. Yeah. What has happened is that the governing body, and we know what Federal Reserve, it's not necessarily acting in the interest of the public. It's acting in the interest of the bank cartel. It was founded many years ago. So they may still have good intent. The problem is they don't react in a timely manner. And again, it's regulation and sort of manipulation by a bunch of folks with data. Mm-hmm. The markets could do a whole lot better. So my point here is that the velocity of the increases is the problem. It's not the fact that the interest rates are rising. It's how fast they're rising.
Okay, so talk to us about what this does to a real estate deal. And the thing that drives me crazy, Mike, and it's an ongoing thing, I've said this for 15 years easily, is that nobody really segments the marketplace. They don't talk about the marketplace. They talk about the real estate market as though 400 markets in this huge country are all the same, right? They don't segment into linear, cyclical, and hybrid markets. They talk about quote unquote housing. And, what price range housing, what market, there's so many things. But we have to make some sweeping generalizations here, which we're going to do, and even talk about it from the commercial real estate standpoint, too. Something that we've talked about many times over the years, which is cap rate compression or yield compression, right?
Yeah. So cap rates are used in commercial real estate. They can also be used in residential real estate, simply computed as net operating income divided by the current price or market value. It's just a definition. I'm going to skip the example. I'm going to assume the audience knows how to compute a cap rate. Again, it's an income divided by the cost of a given asset. Many applications, all types of commercial deals, and investment real estate is a good use case. So now let's talk a little bit about the inverse relationship between cap rates and prices. I wanted to cover this point. So as cap rates get worse, essentially the cap rates increase, and the cap rates will increase inevitably with rising interest rates. We'll talk about this in a minute. But as cap rates get higher, the prices get lower. That's as simple as that. There's an inverse relationship. As cap rates go down, the prices go up, and the reverse happens. As cap rates go up, the prices go down. So this is just for the clarification how this works mathematically. Now, let's chat about what happens with interest rates and cap rates. Now, the relationship is not strictly mathematical because it varies by type of asset. It varies by the amount of leverage. It varies on many factors. But they move in tandem. When the interest rates go up, cap rates generally will go up. To what degree, it depends. It's very possible that the global economy
Did you mean
worse.
To say cap rates will go up or down?
As interest rates go up, cap rates go up.
Cap rates go up, why? Because prices
because
go
of
down?
There's two reasons. One is cost of financing goes up. So let's say you're buying a property with a cap rate of 6 and you're getting interest rate at 4.5. That spread between the cap rate and the interest rate you're paying on a mortgage is your positive leverage between the income and the debt service rate.
Right, that's your margin.
You know, there's a debt service coverage ratio banks require. In other words, you got to have more income than the mortgage payments. Right.
But the problem is it takes time for that equation to equalize, right? You don't get to equilibrium right away. At first, you have interest rates go up and cap rates are the same because the prices haven't fallen or the NOI, the net operating income, hasn't increased, right? Now, these things do all come together and there are like these equilibrium points in the market, but it takes some time for that to happen, right?
That's exactly correct. So initially what happens as Fed starts rising rates, the rates go up fast. And when they go up fast, the cost of financing goes up just very, very quickly. And anytime a maturing loan has to come for refinancing, that already happens. If it's a sale of a property, the cap rate theoretically is still the good old rate. But when they compute that service coverage ratio, that's going to get worse. In the long run, with inflation, the revenues and the net operating income will go up and it'll keep up, and that will sustain the prices in the long run. But in the short run, that balance is out of whack. In other words, the short-term impacts of interest rate increases, they're felt much faster than the adjustment of the cap rates. And the cap rates, by the way, have not been getting worse, even though the interest rates have been increasing.
Right.
And now
that was my point of asking you that question before it.
Yes, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's a great point. The cap rates have been stubborn. They have not increased. What I am saying is, well, every time interest rates go up, there's more and more pressure on cap rates to go up as well. Over time, they will move in the same direction, and they'll move there sooner or later. So this is a historic chart of what has happened since 2001 until end of 2016. Directionally, the interest rates have been dropping. The cap rates have been not necessarily moving in exactly in tandem, but directionally, they've moved in the same direction. The market doesn't move perfectly. It goes up and down. It's supply demand of the money. If it's inflow of capital from China running into the United States looking for assets, that could cause the cap rates to come down. Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of money from outside of the United States that's looking for safety of the U.S. markets. Those things influence, obviously, prices. But overall, the substitution effect, obviously, savers get more on their money in the bank instead of making the investments in deals that generate less cash flow. And then the cost of financing, the debt service coverage ratio itself, is what's causing pressure on the cap rates. So look at this. This is an example of what higher interest rates do to cash flow, cap rates, and asset prices. So this is an example. I'm talking about an asset that is worth $10 million with $7.5 million mortgage and a $2.5 million equity. To make a long story short, let's look at the gross revenues of $1 million a year with expenses of $250,000 and net operating income of $750,000. So in the scenario of interest rates being 6%, just for the sake of this discussion, the cap rate is 7.5%. The interest rate is 6, there's a pretty decent positive leverage, and the cash on cash return in this case to investors is about 8.4%. So that's a decent scenario, but that is based on 6% interest rates. As interest rates go up, now if you look at the same sort of scenario, when the interest rate goes up to 7%, and again, this doesn't happen overnight, but a couple of quarterly increases might get us there. What will happen is if investors want the same level of cash on cash return of around 8.4%, they will be now demanding the cap rate no longer 7.5, but more like 8.1%. And what would it do to the price? What it would do to the price is effectively they will be willing to pay only $9,270,000 instead of $10 million. So the price that they're willing to pay drops 7.3%. Because the cost of financing is higher, and if they need to maintain the cash on cash return, the only way it can happen is either net operating income has to go up, but that takes time, and certain times there are factors that the investor can't control. They can't control how fast the rent roll will go up. They can't control a number of other things. The expenses can go up, but all other things being equal, for the sake of the argument right now, we're saying the property is run to the best of the management ability today. So the NOI in the property is still $750,000 a year. But if the interest rates have gone up to 7%, the investors will no longer pay $10 million. They'll pay 9.2 with change. That's right. My key.
This problem is multifaceted, obviously. What happens in these cycles is you see the seller and the buyer, but the seller is using the past comps, saying that, you know, this property down the street sold at a 7 cap, then that means I should get a 7 cap, right? And they're saying that to the buyer, and they're trying to come to an agreement. But since the capital structure has changed, and in the fact that these interest rates are higher, you know, the buyer's not going to be willing to pay that. But again, this is a very slow process of the way this works its way through the system. And that's why real estate is so much less volatile than stocks, because it's slow to trade. It has fairly high transactional friction. And I look at this as a benefit. I think this is a good thing. Most people say, well, the stock market, people say, oh, it's a bad thing. You know, I love stocks. I can trade it with a click of a mouse and very little cost. But that liquidity creates volatility, as I always say. When there's less liquidity, there's less volatility. Contrary to what some people believe, some people might argue with me on that, but they're wrong and I'm right.
Jason, it's hard to ever prove you wrong.
I know, I'm pretty good at debating.
From experience, you're always right.
Yeah, no, I'm not always right. Hey, listen, I'll tell you something I've been infamously wrong about, and that is interest rates, what we're talking about now. I mean, years ago, I was predicting we'd have much higher rates all along the way, and we should have. I mean, you know, I'm sure you'll agree that we should have, logically speaking, rates should have been higher. They were artificially low, but we live in a world where the Federal Reserve and the Treasury, they can defy gravity. It doesn't have to make sense. It's government and central bank fiat.
It's called socialism.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
I ran away from
socialism. Not exactly socialism, but yes, I know.
This is a subsidy. This is a government manipulation of the private sector coming in and providing cheap interest rates to the public. That's what they've done for years.
Yeah, and low interest rates are not necessarily good. That's another contrarian thinking, right, Mike? Like, you know, rates should be where they need to be based on the supply and demand of money in the marketplace, okay? They shouldn't be artificially suppressed, because on one side you think, well, hey, I got a bunch of cheap debt, that's good. But on the other side, you can't earn a return on your money safely, you know, and they cause inflation and have lots of ripple effects throughout the economy.
That's right. So I'm going to continue here. When I said you're always right, I meant it a little bit sarcastically. I'm not trying to pick on you, but from time to time, you don't always get it right.
Yeah, no, I didn't get the interest rate thing right many years ago, and I freely admit I was fabulously wrong about interest rates.
You couldn't predict what the government's going to do. That's one thing that's really difficult to do.
Yeah,
but again, let's go back to the key subject here. So the key subject is that directionally, in this example, as interest rates go up by 1% per year, the cap rate adjusts by roughly 0.6%, and then the price of an asset drops by 7.3%. And then if you look all the way to the right on the last column of a table, if the rates go up by 2%, much worse picture happens. In this particular example, the cap rate goes up twice 0.6, so 1.2%, and the price of an asset drops to 8.6 million from 10 million. Mm-hmm. Directionally, this is inevitable. It may not happen in the same proportion, and as you said, it may take time for the market to absorb the interest rate increases.
Right.
It is not liquid and it's not fast, but the market forces will do that to assets over time.
Eventually.
Let's continue. So the whole point of this discussion was, when people invest today, they have to prepare for higher interest rates and for higher cap rates in these projects. I've seen a lot of these offering memorandums, a lot of gurus out there doing syndications, and they put these deals forward on the table today, and then they're offering great returns on paper. But the reality is the assumptions are wrong on the back end. So these assets are not going to be worth what they think they're going to be worth on the back end.
Right.
So this particular slide, all it says is, if you've gotten into a project at a good price and you have built-in equity, just focus on the cash flow, because the appreciation on the back end may or may not happen depending on what happens with interest rates. That's the key point here. So as even a strong project today, if you have underwritten it aggressively and the interest rates will go up, the back end value of the asset may not be the same as you hope to achieve initially.
Well, Mike, this is the beauty of residential real estate investments versus commercial real estate investments. You can get those highly desirable 3-decade-long fixed rate loans at still artificially low interest rates. on commercial properties, you typically will get a shorter run. You'll get a 5-year fixed and then it'll become adjustable rate, maybe 7 years, maybe even 10. But rarely do you see that 30-year fixed rate loan on a commercial property. And you definitely don't get as much leverage as you do on a residential property. So the residential investment market, I like it the best for that reason. And it would be an interesting thought experiment. You know, do you think interest rates, I mean, I doubt you think interest rates are at the market rate yet, but like, what is the market rate? Will we ever really know the market interest rates because we have so much manipulation and distortion in the market?
Well, that's a brilliant question, Jason. I don't know because we don't have a legitimate market here. So what we have is we have a heavily manipulated market by a Federal Reserve, also in the residential housing and some multifamily. This, the GSO, the Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, FHA, USDA, VA, all these loans have artificially lower rates. They act as a subsidy. So what would be a real market if those organizations were out of business? It would certainly be higher. I don't know how much higher. It's harder to determine. I almost can't speculate on what the rates would be if we didn't have manipulation by the various parts of the government, keeping the rates artificially low.
Yeah.
The point is this, we will continue to live in this environment. We're not going anywhere fast. The Fed has to exist, and the United States government needs to print money. And we live in the age of no gold standard. So the Fed is absolutely a part of the system, and it's there for good. And they'll continue to manipulate the interest rates. What I think will happen, and you've heard me before, as much as interest rates should be higher, they will go up somewhat for a brief period of time, a few years. But I do believe in the grand conspiracy theory. I'm sure you've heard of this grand conspiracy theory. There's many theories.
Yep.
But the theory is that the United States government just can't afford high interest rates.
Right.
Because of the debt service on national debt and over time unfunded liabilities. So they'll manipulate rates back down. The quantitative easing, we'll still have inflation, but we'll have low interest rates, as strange as it sounds, because the U.S. government just can't afford to pay high interest rates on its debt in the long run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's pretty cool in a way, I guess, to have the world's biggest debtor, the U.S., control the global interest rates to the largest extent of any party out there. So I guess that means we will never have them as high as they should be in a free market.
That's right. That's right. All major economies trying to manipulate. They all want to devalue their currency. They all... I mean, I think it's your term, inflation-induced debt destruction,
it probably is,
favorite terms.
Yep.
So I'm in agreement. But one point I wanted to convey, so here's a question. Is it possible that the asset prices will not fall even with rising interest rates? And the answer is, we've had this discussion offline. Interest rate increases typically means rent increases, but that takes a while to kick in.
Sure.
So yes, it's possible, but the rents have to go up. And as the rents go up, net operating income goes up, and that adjusts for higher interest rates.
Right.
But in general,
the one thing that does happen, though, is when you get higher interest rates, and yes, rents slowly work themselves up, right? The rents go up along with interest rates. Those are correlating indicators. But what happens is that the supply contracts because there are fewer investors buying investment properties in higher rate environments because it's harder for them to make the numbers work because it takes a while to get back to that equilibrium point. And this is why you could argue, you know, this is really just the business cycle, right? That Austrian school business cycle concept, because we're not talking about inventories here like we talk about in the rest of the business cycle. We're talking about, well, we are talking about inventories, housing inventory, but we're talking about, you know, strike prices, because investors won't make decisions when things don't make sense. You know, they're always going to look for the best alternative for their capital. And so the supply of rental housing will constrict because not as many investors are buying or developing rental housing inventory. But also you have the situation where current renters cannot afford to buy and move out of the renter pool because they can't afford the higher interest rates. So they're stuck in the renter pool. So demand actually increases, or at least is sustained. Well, inventory contracts. Yeah, it's a whole interesting thing. there's one more component, though. On the homeowner side, okay, there are homeowners out there with these terrific, very low, artificially low interest rate mortgages. And even if they want to move, if their family's expanding or they want to move to another area, they won't make that move because they can't give up their cheap mortgage because they can't afford the next one, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Affordability. You live in New York. It's like living in a rent-controlled apartment. That rent-controlled apartment is such a good deal that even if I want to move, if I need to move because the family's expanded, I'm not going to give it up easily. Right? I'm going to make an artificial decision to stay in that rent-controlled apartment, and a cheap mortgage is like a rent-controlled apartment in a way.
That's exactly correct. I'm in 100% agreement with you that the long-term interest rate, the assets that you have leveraged with fixed rate debt, and that rate is low, that's a phenomenal asset. It's a liability on your balance sheet, but the fact the rate is low is sort of an asset. So I would agree with you. Yep. That people don't move away from great mortgages unless they absolutely have to.
Yeah, mortgages are a terrific asset. Absolutely. That's a big part.
I agree. Everything you said is good. Absolutely good. Let me continue to, so the whole life cycle of this is supposed to be this. We're supposed to see inflation, right? Ultimately, why is Fed raising rates? Well, because they're expecting inflation to be higher. The 10-year treasury moving up. Why? Because 10-year treasury is reflecting expectation of inflation. So the inflation expectation goes up, hopefully the real inflation will go up. And typically inflation means higher gross rents, higher NOI, that enables a higher debt service and better cash flows. And overall, that's what forces sort of appreciation based on income approach. Obviously residential properties don't just trade on income, they trade also on market forces, on competitive properties and the pricing. But the investment math in commercial or investment real estate is very similar from the math perspective. My question is, maybe interest rates are good for the real estate? And in the long run, yes, I would agree that the interest rates are generally pretty good. Real estate is a great hedge against inflation. So if interest rates are reflecting inflation, then real estate holdings over time should work as a hedge. But the problem is that the quickly raising interest rates could cause a debt crisis. So it's not, again, the increases themselves, but it's the velocity of the increases that could cause problems. And I mentioned this a little earlier in this discussion, but if there's a rate reset on variable rate mortgages or fixed for 5 years and then they reset, or there are assets that need to be purchased or sold, that's where the rate reset could cause all kinds of grief, requiring additional capital contributions, inability to refinance and whatnot. So it could cause debt crisis. And real estate is not the only sector. The whole economy is over-leveraged. By the way, one of the reasons why stock market is reacting very nervously right now to rising interest rates is because the corporate balance sheets are heavily over-leveraged with cheap financing. Mm-hmm. The moment that debt rolls over, much higher cost of financing, much worse earnings. So what we're seeing in the stock market right now is a fear that the earnings are peaking temporarily. Or in the long run, they'll go up again when the inflation catches up. But for now, that's the problem, is that the PE is at the peak level, and that's why the stock market is right now is in a nervous breakdown. Mm-hmm. Again, I mentioned this, the major risk is the fact that the Fed is raising rates too fast. It'll slow down many sectors of the economy. As I mentioned, refinancing costs will go up, and they can cause just major crisis on refinancing. And this also may cause psychological issues. So the moment corporations' earnings go down, what do corporations do? They cut spending. They have responsibility to investors. So a significant part of this is consumer sentiment, the fact that the consumers are spending money. But the moment corporations start cutting jobs, the whole thing might go into a vicious recession cycle faster than you think.
Right. So
how to prepare for rising interest rates? Well, number one, refinance today. Lock in long-term fixed rates today. They're still good on a long-term basis. So if you can do this, do this. The other point that I'm making is reduce leverage, especially if you have variable rates, don't get over-leveraged. If you can get, so say, 75% loan-to-cost mortgage, maybe you should do 70 or even 65. Put a little bit more cash in. It'll create safety. It'll reduce your leverage. You may not feel you're getting as great a return on equity if the prices were climbing up. But what if there's a recession? My point is having lower leverage will help you during a recession. And now we're not looking at a great appreciation period of time. We're looking at a potentially some level of correction and recession. The other point to keep in mind is at times it's good to have partners. So instead of taking on more debt, maybe take on a partner, have somebody in chip in some capital and reduce borrowing. The next point is cash is the king. Increase cash reserves as much as you can. First of all, the cash in the bank today starts earning interest. That's the good news. That's what Jason, you said, the savers are making return on their money. So having cash, having some interest on cash helps. Second.
Well, I would say a little bit of cash, but not too much, because cash is a money losing deal, you know, after taxes and inflation.
Yeah, cash, I agree. So what I was saying is
you want enough cash to get yourself through the storm. You need reserves. It should be called reserves, not cash.
Look at my slide. What does it say? It says increase cash reserves. I did not say go to 50% in cash.
Fair enough.
Okay. 5% in cash, go to 10%. That's all I'm saying.
Okay. A little bit more cash maybe for the downturn. Got it.
Exactly. And when the market corrects and opportunities come to the table, having cash is always handy to take advantage of those opportunities. Diversify. So that goes without saying. As much as you can, keep diversifying between different markets, types of assets, location. And as you mentioned, various parts of the country will behave very differently. So coastal markets can go up and down like a yo-yo, while steady Eddy markets may do much better. Yep. From that perspective, diversification is a great play.
Yep.
And focus on cash flow. Just focus on good, solid cash flow generating assets and fix long-term interest rates.
Mm-hmm. Good stuff. Mike, thank you for joining us. Appreciate it. Give out your website.
The easy way to remember is bigmikefund.com. So this is my podcast, bigmikefund.com. And I did grab a site called bigmikefund.com as well. But the primary website is tempofunding.com. From the word temporary investments, T-E-M-P-O, tempofunding.com. And appreciate you having me on the podcast.
Big Mike, thanks for joining us. Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. Please be sure to subscribe so that you don't miss any episodes. Be sure to check out the show's specific website and our general website, hartmanmedia.com, for appropriate disclaimers and terms of service. Remember that guest opinions are their own, and if you require specific legal or tax advice or advice in any other specialized area, please consult an appropriate professional. And we also very much appreciate you reviewing the show. Please go to iTunes or Stitcher Radio or whatever platform you're using and write a review for the show. We would very much appreciate that. And be sure to make it official and subscribe so you do not miss any episodes. We look forward to seeing you on the next episode.